Hi there, my name is Jamie Mackay and I lead the Postgraduate Learning and Teaching programmes at the Royal Conservatoire of Scotland. The following podcast is part of a series of interviews with graduates of the part-time M.Ed in Learning and Teaching in the Arts programme. This programme is delivered on a blended learning model but can also be studied fully remotely. All participants on the programme have a role as an arts educator and the programme is designed to help them develop their teaching practice and their arts practice, and it culminates in a self-designed final project. For more information on the programme, check the website on rcs.ac.uk/med. In this podcast, I'm very pleased to be interviewing Roz Madison. Roz is the head of production at the Royal Conservatoire of Scotland and has been leading the production department since 2002, as well as fulfilling several external academic advisory roles, both across the UK and internationally. Roz completed her M.Ed in Learning and Teaching in 2022, where she set out to investigate why Generation Z students are so different and whether current learning and teaching methods need to change to accommodate them. Could you introduce yourself and say a little about your current role as an arts educator?
Okay, my name's Roz Madison. I'm currently the head of production at the Royal Conservatoire of Scotland, which means I am the academic lead for production within the conservatoire, with particular responsibility for the two undergraduate degrees that we currently run, which are the BA Production Arts and Design and the BA Production Technology and Management. My role further within that is to deliver teaching in things like critical and contextual skills, cultural awareness, health and safety, and so on. My previous history was that I taught the stage management side of things, but as I moved up, obviously I now have a stage management lecturer, so I moved over to the more contextual area of program delivery. So in terms of my direct contact with students, in terms of education, they're the elements that I deliver, but I have overall strategic and operational overview of both programs and therefore all nine subject areas within them.
So when you're working with learners, what's your goal?
I guess there are two kind of sides to this. One is that when I'm working with learners in a classroom, then the goal within that will be whatever the outcome of that module is, that class is, and so on. So that'll be quite defined. But there is a much broader thing, and it spills over into a lot of the other things that I do, which probably falls more under the academic management of the program than the education side. But then there's such a crossover, it's difficult to separate the two. But I deal a lot with students on a one-to-one basis, whether it's to do with pastoral support or whether it's to do with one-to-one support for critical contextual skills, working on techniques to help them with time management or reflection or whatever. So I think in that remit, my goal is very much to embed things like seeing things from both sides of the story. I think it's having a broader outlook, having a if I can encourage them to put actions back on themselves rather than expect people to do things for them all the time, then I feel like I've achieved something. So I guess that's probably one of my core goals, is to develop that kind of independence within the individual rather than just solving all their problems for them. And kind of it's the old adage of, you know, you can give a man a fish and he'll eat for a day, and you can teach a man to fish and he'll be able to eat for the rest of his lifetime, kind of thing. But it's that I can give them all the answers and say, do it like this and do it like that, and that will get them through whatever that particular individual challenge is, probably. But what I try to do is turn the conversation on them so that the goal then becomes more sustainable. It becomes something about their own ongoing development rather than just completing whatever it is that's on the agenda at that particular point in time.
And what barriers get in the way of achieving that goal?
There's quite a lot. And again, it would be, it's an individual thing, really. I would say it's to do with a variety of things. It's to do with people's backgrounds, upbringings, personal experiences, the state of their mental health. It's to do with other people's perceptions. It's to do with all of those kind of external factors that our students then internalize and bring back on themselves. And I think that they feel very much like they need to have all the answers right now. And they therefore try and get all those answers from all of these external factors that have been a part of their lives growing up, whatever age they are, whether it's a student straight in from school who's a 17 or 18, or whether it's a slightly older student who's come to us as either a second study or a career change. They might be in their 40s, but even still, it's about, you know, all of the different experiences in their life and how they have taken those and what that has turned them into in terms of being a student. And they obviously want to try and resolve any challenges or overcome their own barriers using that experience. But sometimes that experience is detrimental to that process. So it becomes quite a difficult thing to untangle. I'm not a counsellor and I would never profess to be a counsellor. I'm certainly not medically trained or anything like that. I've done my mental health first aid and, I believe that I'm quite an empathetic person. I'm a good listener. But helping them unpick some of the barriers that they have created themselves or have had created for them, I think is my biggest challenge, and therefore sometimes can be the biggest barrier for me helping them and helping them get through to a good kind of resolution to whatever the situation is.
So what strategies do you use then to achieve that goal or deal with the barriers?
I think probably the most important one is listening, is just to listen and let people share. And again, that's to do with the classroom environment as well as a one-to-one environment. You know, I think having a student voice in the room, regardless of what the room is really important. And whether that's through student representatives or, you know, through somebody who's coming along to speak for you because you don't feel confident to do that, or whether it's just getting opinions in the room about whatever is, you know, whatever subject is being discussed, or it is just sitting on a one-to-one basis listening to somebody tell me about what's going on. I think that's probably one of the most important strategies to use. I think in terms of professional development, I think it's also about bringing in other voices. So it isn't just me and it isn't just the student voice. There's also professionals coming in. There's other staff who are bringing in their opinion. And to an extent, depending on what the subject is, what the session or the conversation is about, embedding an understanding that there isn't necessarily a right or wrong answer or a good way of doing something or the right way of doing something. Is there's often lots of different potential solutions or lots of different potential approaches. And it's up to that individual then to work out what the best one for them is in their circumstances. So sometimes that's very much about having listened, then asking questions back to the individual. It's about, well, how do you want to deal with this? Or what is it you want to get out of this session? Or how would you have dealt with that situation if it had been up to you? It's very much about getting them to interrogate their own, their kind of almost their gut instinct based on that experience so far, and then just trying to help them, work their way through that, I guess.
Yeah. And how do you measure your success as an arts educator?
Again, lots of different ways, I guess. If I can, on a one-to-one basis, if a student can leave my room with a smile on their face, then that's one immediate measure. There are longer-term measures in terms of, you know, kind of more traditionally acknowledged kind of milestones, kind of passing things, graduating, and so on. I guess the one for me is a much longer goal. It's actually meeting those students in 10 years' time and them being in a positive place, being in whatever employment they want to be in, feeling fulfilled, and still wanting to be in touch with me and the institution. So, still clearly understanding that it was something that we did that helped on that journey that has made them the person or the practitioner or the, you know, the professional that they are now 10 years hence. So, I think it's, I'm in it for the longer goal. I think the longer game rather than just, you know, kind of someone feeling like they've achieved something in the next 5 minutes.
How would you describe the ideal relationship between you and a learner?
I think this is probably where respect comes into it in quite a big way. It's very much to do with having respect on both sides. Obviously, traditionally, though, there's always been a lot of kind of historical, you must respect your teacher knows everything kind of thing, and that's absolutely not necessarily true. So and I learn so much from my students myself, so I think a mutual respect is really important. They obviously need to understand that I am in a certain position and I have a certain level of experience, and therefore that deserves an element of respect. But also, I need to completely respect that they are individuals with their own experiences, and they may have and often do have a really useful and positive contribution to any situation, any conversation. So I think respect's probably the biggest thing. There is clearly a line. Of course, there is a line. I am still in the educator role, and they are still in the learner role. So there is still a driver that needs to come from me, but that doesn't mean to say that I am always right and I am always the person with the knowledge. It just means that I am the person that is trying to help them find the right direction for them and help them find ways to ensure that they get the knowledge and the learning from wherever that's going to come from. So I think, yeah, respect's probably the biggest thing for me in terms of the relationship with my students.
What job title are you most comfortable with?
I answer to anything. It's a funny one. When I did my MEd, there was a module called Context and Culture, and I had to interrogate my own arts practice, which I found really challenging because I, having been in education for so long, I didn't feel like an arts practitioner anymore. I didn't feel like I actually did that. I felt like I just taught it. So at the time, I had this conversation with myself, well, who are you? What are you? What do you do? What is your, because it was head of production is this grandiose title that doesn't actually really mean anything. I'm not, you know, I'm not head of the productions. I'm not head of production as you would expect within a theatre environment. That's not what I do. I'm an academic lead to production education, if you like. So I don't know. I kind of grapple with it. I guess probably if we threw all of the traditional titles out of the pram, as it were, I would probably like to be the critical friend. I guess verging into the mentoring kind of side of things, but I think, yeah, I would like to think if I could create my own title, it would probably be something like critical friend. I think somebody who is able to engage on a very personal human level, but also has that level of criticality to ensure that there is also rigor and there is also a kind of a quality assurance of the journey, if that makes sense.
Absolutely does, yeah. Great. Okay, so what three values are central to your practice as an arts educator?
Oh. I would say respect. I think put that at the beginning just because I've just talked about that. But I think within that also, compassion will play a big place in that. I think you know, that kind of understanding, appreciation, putting yourself in someone else's shoes, all of that, I think, is really vital. So yeah, respect and compassion. Probably self-motivation, actually. I think, again, it's something that I've had to deal with myself, but also I think it's something that is not necessarily inherent in our student body. It's something that can be there, but it's something that needs to be encouraged and people need to realize the benefit of it. But self-motivation, you can get a degree, you can do a job adequately by doing as you're told and reaching whatever short-term goals you've been set or assessments you've been set. But actually to really get full benefit out of anything in life, whether it's study or work or play or family or whatever it is, you have to put in so much more than is expected of you in order to really reap all the rewards and all the benefits that you can get from it. So yeah, I would say my third one's probably self-motivation.
Thank you. So we're going to do a slight shift in the questions. If you could have a mentor from any time in history, real or fictional, to support your arts education practice, who would you choose?
It's a really difficult one. I'm just going to go in on a really personal level here because there's somebody who I've always admired, nothing at all to do with arts education, which is Audrey Hepburn. And I've really admired her career, her work, her portfolio, but also her philosophies and her, the way she lived her life. And I think having someone like her, again, coming very much from that human, compassionate level would be the kind of person I think that I would want to have my back.
And if you could ask her one question, what would it be?
I probably what would be your one piece of advice? I think it would be, I would want to ask, what's the one thing that I should give to my students? What's the one, or what kind of motivation helped you get through all the trials in your life and still be such a positive and giving and humane person? I think something like that. I'm not sure kind of how you phrase that question, but yeah, what's the one piece of advice, I guess, you would give me?
And how do you think she would answer?
There is one really good quote that I know that she did say. I think I'm sure she would answer in a very compassionate way. But the one thing that I always remember when I first kind of started looking into her and her life was that there was a quote that was simply, nothing is impossible. But she added to that, it's in the word, I'm possible. And I thought that was really lovely at the time. It turned nothing is impossible, but it very much turns it in on yourself again. It's about self-motivation. It's about believing in yourself. So I think it would be something along that. Like I said, something in, deeply embedded in humanity and compassion, but very forward thinking and positive as well, hopefully.
Final question. Yeah. Is there anything else you'd like to say about your arts education practice?
I don't think so. I think the main thing is that I on a daily basis, I mean, I have massive frustrations, I have massive barriers, whether they're operational, whether they're to do with individuals and development and so on. But I think on a daily basis, I have a moment when I remember how privileged I am to be in the position that I'm in, and how important that role is, and how critical that role is in that I am in the position to influence emerging, growing minds and abilities and so on. So I think that's important in any arts educator. I think if you lose sight of that and you get completely embedded in the fact that the resource isn't big enough or the particular situation is demanding and so on, it takes you away from everything that you believe as an arts practitioner. Again, going back to that thing of what is my arts practice, it's about my practice was all to do with theatre and to do with sharing and to do with communication and storytelling and messages and I think and very much to do with education and but to do with kind of positivity and so on. So I think if you lose sight of that, you then start to detrimentally impact on your students. I think you need to hold on to that positivity in order to be a good educator, but particularly in the arts, because of the nature of the arts. I think it's really important that you hold on to that to ensure that you personally don't get just bogged down with the day-to-day operational stuff and remember the end game and remember that end point. Remember, you know, what that student that you're going to meet in 10 years' time who again, you're feeling like you've reached your goals, they've reaching their goals, but what have they had the chance to give to society in that 10 years? And I think sometimes we lose sight of the kind of global impact that potentially could have. We often say, oh, it's just theatre, it's not rocket science, or we're not brain surgeons, or it's not life and death. But it is actually, you know, it can be for some people. And I think, you know, it's easy to lose sight of that end game, of that really big end game sometimes. So yeah, I think that's probably something that I've been aware of recently, is not to get too bogged down with that kind of operational day-to-dayness and keep remembering the longer game.
Thank you so much, Roz. I've really enjoyed your rich and interesting responses. I'm sure our listeners will too. Really appreciate
it's
you taking
pleasure.
Time to do this. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
For more podcasts in this series, go to portal.rcs.ac.uk/arts-educator-interviews.